Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. On the day that football returned to Italy, we're still waiting for our first goal, though, as it finished goalless between Juventus and AC Milan. But it means that Juve advance to the final of the Coppa Italia. 1-1, of course, in the first leg means they go through on the away goal rule. Tomorrow, it's the other semi-final. Napoli taking on Inter Milan, a game that is live on ESPN Plus at 3 p.m. Eastern. Well, Gav Marcotti, Stevie Nicol and Craig Burley to reflect on that goalless draw in Turin. Craig, this is a weird game because I thought Juventus started well. Ronaldo then had that penalty saved, Milan down to 10 men, and then not really much happened.
There was nothing weird about it. It just was an extremely low standard of game. And maybe that's to be expected after the lockdown. Look, Milan came for to hit Juventus on the sucker punch on the counter. That was clear even with 11 men. And it was even clearer when Rebic got sent off and he had no front man, basically. But as for Juventus, you know, after that initial period, you know, they're playing against 10 men. And there was just no fluidity to their performance. Ronaldo, bad touches. I just was totally unimpressed. And I know it's the first game back. I understand all that. But I was expecting a bit more from Juventus, particularly against 10-man Milan.
Gab?
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree with that. I don't think either team played very well. And if you want to give Milan an alibi for the absences of Theo Hernandez and Ibrahimovic, fine. But then Rebic gets himself stupidly sent off. And I thought, you know, Pioli's decision to just say, all right, we're just going to cram everybody back and not send on a striker for the out ball, because, you know, it's not as if Milan's attacking midfielders, the likes of Captain Jack, Bonaventura, and Calhanoglu, and Paqueta are roadrunners. It seemed like they were happy to hand the initiative to Juve. And maybe that was the right decision, because as we saw, plenty of issues for Juve in the middle of the park, created very little. Ronaldo, I thought, penalty miss aside, an off day for him. And Douglas Costa showed that, you know, unless he's going one-on-one, he contributes very little. So I think a lot of work for Sarri to do. And, you know, let's hope business picks up.
Stevie, how concerned would you be if you're a Juve fan watching this 90 minutes? Obviously through to the final, but a lot of questions surrounding them. Or would you just give them a pass because it's the first game back after 3 months?
Well, I think you have to give the players a bit of a pass, and you can't expect them to be sharp. You can't expect them to be 100% physically at it. So on both sides, you have to give them that. I think AC Milan almost got it right. Pioli, particularly down to 10 men, just sitting tight, and then with 15 to go, trying to get people forward. Juventus, on the other hand, I don't think they helped themselves, and I don't think Sarri did anything to help them. Listen, when you're playing against 10 men, at least you can push forward and stop the opponent getting out. Every time, particularly a goal kick, as a good example, they stood off and let Donnarumma roll it to one of the centre-backs. That, to me, is just dumb. You know, that's not being smart. And you can't even blame that on not being fit, because what that does is that actually saves your legs. You just take a step forward before the goalie's going to take it, and he has to kick it. That to me is common sense coaching. And Sarri, well, there was no common sense coaching. So I think a lot of the problems are down to Sarri.
What do you make of Ronaldo today, Stevie?
I don't want to be harsh on him, but I did have a chuckle. And I believe it was the 55th minute, he had a race with Kjaer. And actually, I thought he had Gab on his back, because Kjaer's not that slow, but he's not that quick. So listen, I said before, you give the players a pass, and I'll certainly give Ronaldo a pass if indeed Gab was on his back.
I can confirm that I don't believe Gab was on his back. Craig, do we just turn the page on this game and almost treat it as a one-off and move on from here?
Well, they're in the final. They still are going to be favourites to win the league at the moment. But clearly, Sarri has some issues fixed, putting all the chess pieces in the right positions. There's no doubt about that. He's still trying to figure it out. He was trying to figure it out properly before the lockdown. He kind of sussed a few things out. But it looks as if the lockdown certainly hasn't helped. And you know, the guys are not fully fit. I understand that. But he does look, and he has talked about it, he does look as if he's trying to figure out a way to get everything revolving around Ronaldo in terms of that final third of the field. And it's a bit of a problem.
Gap?
Yeah. I think this kind of reinforces what we sort of already knew, suspected with the Bundesliga, is that when these teams come back, it's really hard to gauge what they've been doing and what condition they're in. All we heard about the reports coming out of Juve since they went back into training was, oh, Cristiano's so fit. He worked so hard. He's best shape of his career. Dybala totally unaffected by the 6 weeks he spent with the coronavirus in quarantine. And yet, you know, you saw in a game like this, those guys weren't as sharp, I thought, physically and athletically as they should have been. The midfield obviously didn't help them because that was horrendous. But I think it does go to show that, you know, going forward, I think we can almost kind of forget a lot of what we thought we knew from the earlier part of the season.
Thanks, boys. Good games tomorrow in the Bundesliga. It starts with Fortuna Düsseldorf taking on Borussia Dortmund. And it's Bayern Munich against Borussia Mönchengladbach. After that, we turn our attentions to what's happening in Italy. Coppa Italia, as I mentioned, live on ESPN+. Napoli with that slim lead going into the clash against Inter Milan. And La Liga is back, of course, and it's Barca's first game. Lionel Messi's side away against Mallorca. Friday night action in the Bundesliga. A comfortable 2-0 victory for Leipzig over Hoffenheim, meaning they are 6 points clear of Borussia Mönchengladbach. Gladbach in action against Bayern Munich this weekend, but with 3 games to go, Leipzig looking good for a Champions League place. Julian Laurent and Frank Leboeuf join us to reflect on this game, which was dominated by Dani Olmo, Jules.
You're right, Dan, especially at the beginning of the game, Leipzig had the best of the first 15 minutes, really. After the penalty turn, first given by the referee and then taken away by VAR, but after that it was all Leipzig and they also had the last 15. But in between, it was more of a contest and Hoffenheim probably had the better chances as well. They hit the crossbar, they could have easily scored one or two, but overall, I think Leipzig and Dani Olmo, especially in that opening 15 minutes, were just too quick. The way they go forward, as soon as they get the ball back, is incredible. And Olmo with 2 lovely finishes, justifying again the big transfer fee that he got when he moved there in January. But what a prospect he is. Only 22 years of age. And remember, he was in Croatia at Dinamo Zagreb before, but had a lot of experience there, played in the Champions League. And now that was a big move in a much better side, much better club, much better league as well. And he's slowly adapting to Nagelsmann's style and showing how talented he is.
Yeah, the Spaniard, when he first arrived, maybe didn't quite justify that big transfer tag. However, as Jules says, looked great today, Frank.
Yeah, he did. He did, and he made the difference. And as Jules said, you know, the first 20 minutes were mostly after that penalty decision or from the referee, that they took the way they needed to be taken that game, and Olmo scored two good goals to in fact finish the game. Because even if Hoffenheim had chances, as Jules said, they never seemed to be in position to really score a goal, and they could have played maybe 2 hours, 3 hours, and maybe not score. It was a strange game after those 2 goals from Olmo, and I got a little bit bored, except that I saw a beautiful Spanish guy in the midfield of Leipzig team to enjoy a little bit of my evening.
Frank, I like it took you so long to admit that you were bored. It's all right. You're with us. You can admit it. You don't have to pretend. Timo Werner, meanwhile, since the news link him to Chelsea, he's got rubbish, Jules.
Yeah, he misses big chances. He still created the goal against Paderborn for Patrick Schick, but overall, you're right. He seems a bit off his game. We saw it tonight again with a huge chance he had to really, really this time kill off the game at 2-0 up, and he hit it way over the bar. It was not just a near miss. It was quite a bad miss. And I thought even in the second half, he had 2 or 3 good positions and didn't make the most of it, either make the wrong decision by shooting or when he should have crossed or things like that. And I just think maybe the whole uncertainty, well, it's not an uncertainty because he will go to Chelsea, but the fact that he can't really be official yet, he can't do his medical. There's still a bit of talks between the two clubs. Maybe that's a bit playing on his mind, and maybe that's why we're not seeing the most efficient version of Timo Werner that we've seen earlier in the season. Although missing chances is quite his weakness. You know, I think he still has to improve in front of goals, and then he will score even more goals once he makes sure that he gets those easy chances.
Tongue in cheek, obviously, Frank. You know, he hasn't turned rubbish overnight. However, if Jules is right about psychologically, it's on his mind, maybe he just wants to get it done. This isn't great, is it, for the future? If you can't score against Hoffenheim or Paderborn because you're worrying about this move, it doesn't bode well for the big games.
I know where you want to go, but I can understand, and I want to find him some excuses about the fact that he's overstressed, maybe a little bit overwhelmed by a soon decision of moving from his club and his country to a new championship. And the world was talking about him in sport-wise, where nobody was transferring somebody also. It was the only one. And we talked all week long about Timo Werner going to Chelsea. So I guess he felt a little bit of pressure. And it's a bit normal that you don't know where you stand at some point. And the result is average games, average performance, and also showing that he needs to improve, as Jules said, the fact that he's wasting a lot of chances and he's not a top scorer, and he still need a progression on that matter. But I'm not worried about that. He's going to work hard. He's going to be tuned in when he's going to go to Chelsea, and I'm pretty sure that he's going to improve his game of finishing actions, and he's going to do well for the club.
It's strange because we're talking about Chelsea as if the season is already finished. Obviously, still a long way to go for the end of the Premier League, which recommences this week, Jules. But let's have a look, shall we? Let's speculate about how they could set up at the start of next season. We already know that Hakim Ziyech is going to come in. That is a done deal. Werner as well. So how will they fit around the current players?
It's an interesting debate already, although it's hard to tell because, one, Lampard has so many options and he can play in so many different ways. And two, I think he will really use this versatility next season when he will adapt to the opposition, depending if they're home or away. All that kind of things will come into consideration. But if you think about it, and what we know for sure is that ideally he would like to play both Tammy Abraham and Timo Werner together. So they can play with Werner a bit on the left-hand side, or they can play a bit like what we see with Leipzig regularly, with Yusuf Poulsen playing as a number nine, and as this sort of the anchor, if you want, and Timo Werner playing as a second striker. And I believe, and I'm sure a lot of people agree as well, that that's probably Werner's best position. Yes, of course he can play wide and he can play on his own up front, but playing off someone who could hold the ball up better than him, maybe, who could use his presence, with Werner then adding the pace and his intelligence in the runs, I think for me that's Werner's best position. Of course, you can't always play with two up front, especially in the Premier League, but there will be some games where Lampard would fancy doing that. There will be games where Werner will come off the left-hand side, for example, in a 4-3-3 formation. But I really think that Werner behind Abraham is the way to go for Lampard next season.
Do you like that idea, Frank?
Yeah, it's nice and it's a possibility, but I think we don't know how it's gonna match and work the Lampard's team. And also, don't forget that if you do that, if you put Werner as a 9.5 or 10, you only put Kante and Jorginho behind him, you put out Kovacic. And you put out Mount as well. So you will have to consider, you know, psychologically how your team's going to work. And I think it can be only one position for Werner. And as Jules said again, Werner's going to go to the left. Maybe he's going to go as a striker because Abraham is not going to play maybe away from home some games because Lampard will be looking for some pace in the game and in counter-attack. So, yeah, many possibility. Werner has the chance that he's not stuck in one position. He can play several others. And I'm pretty sure he's gonna play lots of games because of Lampard's different tactics.
Boys, thank you very much. Keep up to date with Chelsea transfer news and indeed the rest of the big clubs. Go over to the website and click on Transfer Talk.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Meanwhile, PSG fans won't need reminding. They have a poor record when it comes to the knockout stages of the Champions League. Of course, made it through to the quarterfinals this season. However, they've not made it past that over the last 10 years. Pastore has a theory about it. It's what the former PSG player had to say. In the French league in recent years, they have been superior to all the other teams. Many times the games were over at halftime and the pace drops for the rest of the match. That's what is missing in the Champions League games, where you can't stop for a second. It happens because in France, they play against teams that require limited effort. Frank and Jules still with me. Craig Burley joins us as well. Craig is back. Craig, what do you make of this?
I mean, look, in an ideal world, every league would be more competitive, but we know they've had mainly dominance there for quite a few years. But what I would say is, If that was the case, how come they managed to hammer Barcelona at home 4-0? Okay, they capitulated in the second leg. That's a different story. But they still managed to hammer Barca 4-0 at home. They just didn't get the job done for various reasons in the second leg. So it may be a small part of it, but I don't think it's the biggest problem.
Frank, are you buying this?
Not at all. I don't say it's a lie. I just say it's an excuse. First, I want to say that this is the kind of player that I loved and enjoy seeing playing when he was playing and not injured every time or every 3 months. But to analyze what he said, I just want to say why I have another question. Why Juventus or Bayern Munich, who are also the best team in their country, who easily win most of the game, are competitive in the Champions League. So it works for those clubs, but it doesn't work for Paris Saint-Germain, or it wouldn't work for Paris Saint-Germain. No, we have to find the excuse in another place. And as Craig said, when you're capable to do the job in the first leg, why don't you do the job in the second leg? So it's different. It may be a curse, but it's also maybe some player who don't do exactly what have to do to be better.
Pastore was in this team, Jules. Surely he knows what he's talking about.
Yes, and I think he has a point in a certain way, by the sense that, of course, it would be much better for Ligue 1, not just for PSG, but for every French club if the league was a bit more competitive. And yes, I think if you have competitive matches more regularly domestically, then maybe when the adversity is stronger and better in the Champions League, maybe you'll be more ready for it. However, I agree with what the boys have said. I don't think it's the biggest reason why PSG haven't done better in the Champions League. I think there's plenty of more important reasons than that one. And I can also take you back to when English clubs were not doing that well in the Champions League. We used to say that because the league was too competitive. So when it got to end of February and March in the big games in the Champions League, they were tired. So I just don't think either of the two arguments really work.
What do you think, Frank? If we put PSG in the Premier League, a more competitive environment, will that make a difference?
That might. Yeah, that might, of course. But I don't know which position they would finish, you know, because we see so many players in that club not ready to fight, to be warriors at certain points. And the Premier League is a very difficult one with a big intensity in the game, especially defensively, different than the League One. So again, and as Jules said, I think there are other reasons why PSG couldn't go further than the quarterfinal or the last 16 some years before. So yeah, it would be interesting to see Paris Saint-Germain playing in the Premier League.
Meanwhile, Jules, they keep reporting that Leonardo, PSG sporting director, wants Allegri to come in and replace Thomas Tuchel. Any legs on this story?
Well, it's a story that, you know, it's been going on for a long time since Leonardo came back. let's not forget, or let's remind ourselves, that Thomas Tuchel is not one of Leonardo's choices, because it was already in place when Leonardo came back to the club. And as we all know, usually a sporting director likes to work with his own people, his own persons that he put in charge, especially in the big jobs. And certainly the role of manager is one of them if you're a sporting director. So, of course, there's pressure on Thomas Tuchel. I think it will be the next season. That would be, he still has a year left on his contract. So he will be there, I think. I don't think he will get a new deal, but he will be there. Maybe more down to the pandemic than actually what Leonardo wanted to do with him. And I still think that Allegri is not far. And I believe Allegri is probably waiting to a certain degree for that job and to work again with Leonardo. So, of course, it's there, and that increases the pressure on Tuchel a lot. To say that Leonardo right now, if he could, would bring Allegri in, I'm not so sure, because I do think there's people at the club, like Nasser Al-Khelaifi, who still appreciate the job that Thomas Tuchel is doing. And let's not forget that they're in the quarterfinal of the Champions League. They have a chance, even if it's a slim one or a small one, to go far in the competition. So I think he deserves some credit to have taken the team there.
Craig, has Thomas Tuchel got enough in the bank, even if they get, say, knocked out in August in the quarterfinals?
I just don't know is the answer. I just don't know. You know, Allegri, I think, would give them a little bit more structure to them. Maybe not as much flair. And that could be an issue as well, because we know there's a lot of flair players, a lot of egos there, a lot of talent there as well, particularly in that front line. And I think his would be a more stringent approach. That may work well for PSG, you know, to get over the line, and particularly in Europe, maybe give them a better chance. But as Jill said, I do get the feeling that if we hadn't had this pandemic and PSG had been knocked out of the Champions League, then I think, almost certainly, I think he'd have been out of a job. But I think this lockdown has changed a lot of things, and he may just survive another year, no matter what happens.
Frank?
I want to say stand up to Leonardo, because the next time they're going to see in the dressing room, it's going to be a very good atmosphere between the two of them. And I think it wasn't very clever to say that. Like, Allegri can bring something better, but the chairman has decided to keep Tuchel, and I think it's clever. For the first time, he doesn't want to throw the money away. There is a 1 year left, and we all know that whatever or whoever you have in the dressing room leading the team as a coach, it all depends on the players. And many players didn't show that they follow orders, and they do mostly what they want, whoever is in charge. So that's the main concern and the main problem. I think the main problem is not who you're going to name as a coach.
Good stuff, boys. Thank you very much. For more Frank and Craig, be sure to check out Extra Time over on our YouTube channel, where the boys answer your questions.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically, all on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
It's proved to be a massive hit. The Battle of the Leagues now has ended the group stages. Goodness me, a terrible showing from Serie A, finishing bottom of Group A, the Premier League and Liga MX through to the semi-finals. Meanwhile, in Group B, Sid Lowe could not get it done for La Liga. It's the French and German contingent who make it through to the knockout rounds. So it will be the Bundesliga against Liga MX and then the Premier League against Ligue 1 in those two semi-finals. There is a real-life press conference looking ahead to those games. Be sure to check that out over on our YouTube channel. And while you're there, here's Best of the Week. Thanks for dressing up for us, Sid. Much appreciated, as always. Really putting an effort in.
And so I signed the balloon, best wishes. I said, what's your name? I don't remember. So I put his name, and I signed. And he took a needle and blew it up. And everybody was laughing. And I said, well, why did you do that to me? He said, I'm a Blackpool fan. Get out of here.
I would prefer that Hercules didn't wear that shirt today. That's clear. You asked about the right and wrong option for MLS. Well, this was definitely the wrong option for Hercules.
You can hear me, Frank, yeah?
I do hear you, but I don't want to respond to you.
Both celebrating their wedding anniversary. Beautiful pictures from Shaka on Instagram down the years, 25 years with his wife. Stevie, what did you do to celebrate yours?
I forgot.
And Shaka, how can you work with Dan Thomas for this long? You must be a strong man to withstand him.
I've got 5 kids, so working with pendulum brats is kind of my thing.
Craig, your choice is golf or football, which I know doesn't really seem like a choice, does it?
Yeah. You're really asking me that? Golf. Golf. Golf.
Really?
Golf.
I suppose less supporters to whistle Gareth Bale, that could be a positive for Real Madrid.
Golf, 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 golf. Golf.
Yeah. Oh, God, you know.
It was decided that we would wear kilts, not by us, but by our management.
I have the question that the world has at the edge of their lips. Were you wearing something underneath?
I can't remember.
Oh. Oh, that's ugly.
Oh. What's that trophy next to you, Don?
It's the Best Father Award, I'll have you know.
They're young, aren't they? They kind of got that. Did you buy that for them to give to you?
Of course I did.
Can Craig do a French accent?
Sound like Frank.
Hamburger. Hamburger. I need to have some hamburger.
Yeah, look.
Ready? Oh!
That cat.
Can I have a bottle of beer? I don't know. What we are frogs. Frog's legs.
Frog legs.
Dos San Miguel, por favor.
That's Spanish.
I know that.
That's Spanish.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you did that.
I'm getting me some pasta and putting me a fries on top, like McManaman. That's Italian.
I still can't believe that he did it. I can believe how bad it is. That brings us to the end of today's show. It's Frank and Craig lining up once again, by the way, on Extra Time, which is next. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Frank LaBeouf and Craig Burley with me. Frank, today...
By the way, I'm not doing impressions this week.
What do you mean this week? You already did it a couple of days ago. It was amazing.
Was it?
Yeah.
I'm not doing it again.
I don't think there's any impressions questions today. Today would have been Euro 2020 first day. Who would have become champions if Euro 2020 played as scheduled, Frank?
England. Let's say England. I don't put France, or maybe the Netherlands. Between England and the Netherlands. I wouldn't put France because too many injuries.
Who's injured?
Well, almost everybody was injured before, 2 months ago or 3 months ago. And now they feed back, but they wouldn't be ready to fight and to give their best. I think many, many players were Kante, for example, was injured. I don't remember. Lucas Hernandez was injured. Lloris just came back from injury.
Yeah.
So
England didn't really have a striker.
Is that enough for you, or do you want me to have a list?
Kane was injured, Rashford injured.
Craig, who would have won it?
France, regardless.
What about their injury?
Oh, no. No, you cannot say that. Come on.
Oh, come on. Don't be anti-French.
We're going to win. We're going to win it next year.
No, but you know, Craig, his appearance money goes down, doesn't it? If they win the Euros as well, off the back of the World Cup, who's going to want Frank LaBeouf anymore to speak anywhere?
No.
Yeah, that's right. I'll get other more recent winners.
That's so lame.
That's it.
No.
Selfish.
No. They only can do as good as we did. That's it. They can't do better.
Of course they can. They can win the World Cup again after, can't they?
Yes, you're right. Yes.
Right, good.
Of course. Yeah.
Frank, who are your best football friends off the pitch?
Vicente Lizarazu. We started to know each other. In fact, we hated each other because we played in League Two when I was in Strasbourg and he was in Bordeaux, and we had big fight for the first place. And it was a crazy season with even Dugarry was playing in the League Two with Bordeaux, and it was a very, very hard time between the two clubs, and we hated each other. And then we been selected to with the national team, and we started to know each other, and we got along very, very well. And since then we call each other more than we see each other, but we care of each other.
Oh, beautiful, Frank. What about you, Craig? Who do you still call, have a little chat to?
Kevin Hitchcock was my best man.
Yep.
From Chelsea, the goalkeeper. Most of the lads at Chelsea, we all got on very well. And I would say I still speak to several of the Celtic players. I'm still in touch on social media with Rory Delap from Derby and a few others there. So, and some of the Scotland boys as well. Yeah, so quite a few.
Kun Aguero or Harry Kane? Frank?
Kun Aguero. Because of his past, what he did. And I know that it was always harder for me to play against players like Aguero than big boys like Kane. Even if Kane is absolutely tremendous, Aguero has something special for me.
What made it more difficult, Frank?
Because they're small, and it's hard to cope with small players when you're tall, and because they go around you, they turn, they can't fall. You touch them, they go for the free kick. It's unbearable with them when you they run. If you are with the big boys like Marcus, Eric, Harry Kane, or Drogba, you can confront yourself and fight against them, and you feel freer to even get into them, you know. So it's hard to cope with those players. With Zola, for example, Owen, now Aguero, complicated.
It's the same with presenters, Frank. The small pesky ones that think they know all are the worst. They're always the most difficult to deal with. You know, just because he's back in the building, he thinks he's got half a brain in his head now. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's so quiet.
Especially when the English. When the English, you know, on top of it, they fight. They never let go. That's very complicated.
No. Well, he can't fight. Sebi would beat him.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair.
I don't know. Who are we talking about? Yeah, no, we don't know. I don't know.
Who is the most underrated player you've played with? Would you go Mark Hughes, Frank? You've mentioned this before.
I don't know if he was underrated because he was absolutely fantastic. Lots of people knew it. I mean, at Old Trafford or at Stamford Bridge. In Wales, he was named as a hero, I would say. I don't know. I think Roberto Di Matteo, until he came to England, he didn't play a lot for Italy. I think he was absolutely fantastic. He was a great lad, a very important person in the squad, and absolutely intelligent person. And I think he wasn't known as a player, as a top player, I think, enough for me.
Craig?
I'll throw a couple of names out there. One of them, I don't know if he would have been underrated, but I think Frank would appreciate, you know, Stevie Clark at Chelsea.
Oh, yeah.
Whether he played centre-half or full-back was, you know, probably 7 or 8 out of 10 almost every game. Very, very quick. He didn't realise how quick he was. He was very clever. And just was a solid player, Clarkey. I don't think people realised how good a player he was. And the other one would have been a guy I played in midfield with Celtic, who was the Danish international, Morten Weghorst. Morten Weghorst was a supremely talented player. About 6 foot three, 6 foot four, but just glided across the surface and had a great touch. And so guys like that, I don't think sometimes supporters appreciate the job people like that do for the teams.
Chelsea then, boys. Their front three, is it better with Pulisic or Abraham joining Werner and Ziyech? What do you think, Frank?
Well, the position of the player will be different if it's Pulisic, because Werner will play at front. If it's Abraham, Werner will play on the left side. Hard to say. I think if I'm Frank Lampard, I start with Werner, Abraham, and Ziyech, and then see how it goes. Because on top, you buy two players. If it's to put one of them on the bench, there is no reason to get them. You bring them because you think they're going to be better with them. So that's as simple as that. Pulisic has, I think, has still have a progression to make it at some point. He's already a fantastic player. He proved it this season. But Werner is more settled in the world of football and maybe deserve more credits.
Craig?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because if it was Pulisic or Hudson-Odoi for that matter, who's equally as talented, Werner through the middle and Ziyech, that's a really flexible front three, and they could rotate. Any one of them could be through the middle at any given time and adapt that kind of role of a false number nine. I know Timo Werner's not a false nine, but Ziyech and Pulisic could do that and may have to do that. If it was the Tammy Abraham in the front three, then it would be a little bit more predictable and less flexible. But, and I kind of get the feeling that might be the way Frank Lampard would go to start with, as Frank said, with Timo Werner on the left-hand side and Ziyech on the right. And it's not a bad front three, to be honest.
Craig, when the Champions League returns, can Manchester City win it despite their leaky defence?
Well, one of the things that's been a plus for football clubs in some sense, and really the only plus through this pandemic, is the fact that injured players have had an opportunity in the main to get fully fit and heal themselves. And you think about Aymeric Laporte and others who've had problems. That's where City's problems have lay this year, in the main. So, you know, with a guy back who is good enough to play in the French national team, doesn't always do it for different reasons, but is certainly good enough, then that could be a big turning point for them in terms of their chances of winning it, rather than where they were, you know, before this pandemic kicked in.
Frank, which Premier League strike partnership do you and Marcel Desailly find the hardest to handle? I'm assuming most Premier League sides played with two strikers up front during your time at Chelsea.
I'm sorry, but I tried to remember his name. He was a big fellow at front playing for Coventry. Maybe Craig can help me out.
Where Dion Dublin
signed for the... Yes, exactly. And I remember the first game of Marcel Desailly was straight after the World Cup. We were still on holidays, I think, with Marcel. And we played at Coventry. And Dion Dublin killed us. Because first, he was a very good player. But on top of it, he was a very strong player. And the first time I saw Marcel Desailly flying because of a challenge with Dion Dublin. And I said to Marcel, Marcel, welcome to England. I think that's the worst game ever that we had with Marcel in the Premier League, being confronted to Dion Dublin. Yeah, that's my lead. That's it, what it is.
Do you know what he does now, Frank?
Commentating, maybe?
He presents a show called Homes Under the Hammer on the BBC.
It does.
About flipping houses, yeah.
Wow. Well, people forget. Sorry, but I heard him talking, you know, at in some interviews that I think very interesting person. So for me, it's clear that he will do something special after his career, and he does it.
He's, to be fair, he's a really nice guy, but he was a big horrible sod on the field, and people forgot that he went to Man United as well. Sir Alex deemed him good enough to go there, and then he broke his leg. But he was, as Frank said, the big day on was a handful. You knew you were in a game, whether you were winning 4-0 or whatever it was, he was going to smash. He was old school in that sense. The centre-halves were getting smashed no matter what.
Final question. What's the most embarrassing publicity stunt a team made you do? Doesn't get much better than Blue Day with Suggs. Craig Burley didn't hold back. If you haven't seen Blue Day, you've got to have a look at it on YouTube, because traditionally the teams would have an FA Cup song And Blue Day was one of the better ones, actually. It was all right.
We had one in 94 before the cup final, which I can't remember, but we recorded some nonsense. And then, you know, Frank was there and I was there, and we went one Sunday, sort of afternoon stroke lunchtime, to a recording studio, and we recorded this thing with Suggs, who apparently is from Madness, who apparently is I think he's a big Chelsea fan. I'm sure he is. I think that's part of the reason. It wasn't that embarrassing, because that's what teams did back in those days, and it is what it is.
Did you do one for Scotland, Craig, as well? The World Cup?
No, but did we? No, but I think Rod Stewart may have recorded a song.
Right.
It was called Don't Come Home Too Soon.
How did that work out?
Yeah, well, it failed. Purple Heather. Purple Heather.
Blue Day.
I don't know. Huh?
Blue Day. Blue Day was in the charts, I think. He did very well, you know, at that time. I love that song. It was very funny to be there in the studio with all the mates. We really enjoyed the day. And I think the fan liked it, so it was a great time for me. It's not a shameful time for us.
Did you ever have to do anything particularly embarrassing though, Frank, during your time?
Well, when I signed for Chelsea, we didn't know that, because it's not usual. We brought it from England when I came back to Marseille, but when you sign, you have to sing a song. And I'm not a good singer, even if I did the Masked Singer and I improved a little bit. But at that time in 96, when I signed for Chelsea, I had to pick a song, and I took My Way, but in a French way, which is in fact the original song. And you say comme d'habitude, like as usual. And it was very embarrassing. Very, very, I felt, it was horrible for me.
That is it. It went to number 22. I just looked up, according to Wikipedia, in the UK singles charts in 1997.
You see?
Yeah.
You see?
Those royalties still rolling in for you boys. That is it. Thank you very much then to Craig and Frank. We'll be back tomorrow for more Extra Time. Until then, goodbye.